Welcome to part two of our Hilchos Nida review. It was gratifying to learn of how many of you downloaded or listened to the first part of this review, and I hope that this second part will be similarly accessible and convenient for you to listen to. As we mentioned and discussed last week, we were dividing the laws of Nida into various units, and last week we focused exclusively on all of the different halachos about how a woman becomes a Nida. I want to dedicate this evening's class to the question of how a woman can leave the state of being a Nida, the issue of how long she has to wait before she can start counting, the whole concept of counting and the Sheva Nekiyim, the seven clean days, Hefsek Tara, Bedikos, and all of the related halachos. What I did not anticipate, but I guess should not have been surprised about, is that there really is so much material here both last week and this week that I think that the two shiurim that we had planned will be exhausted by just those two topics. As much as we'll have covered, we will not be able to cover, however, at the end of tonight's class, is still three significant issues which I think are important and do need review. Number one is the issue of harchakos, the behavior that regulates interaction between husband and wife while wife is in nida. Number two is issues of actual preparation for going to the mikvah. And number three is issues relating to actually being in the mikvah, specifically the large question, which sometimes has very many practical questions, and that is the issue of chatzitza, how one actually goes into the mikvah, and what potential problems there could be while in the mikvah. All of these are important topics, but ones which we'll not be able to get to this week. If there is an interest in future parts of this review, additional components and parts of Shirim to address these issues, please let me know, either by phone at 410-358-8604, or by emailing me at rabbigottlieb@shomriemuna.us, and we will try to schedule future classes, whether it be in this format or some other, to address those issues. In terms of our actual shiur tonight, as I mentioned, I want to focus on the various different halachos and issues that help a woman leave or emerge from the state of being a nida. The first issue in that regard to mention is the halacha which the Gemara in Masachas Nida tells us on Daf Lamed Gimel, and is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch as well, and that is the idea that we have what's known as the five-day minimum. In other words, no matter how long a woman may be bleeding for, she is not allowed to begin the counting of her, quote, clean days until she has waited a minimum of 5 days from when she first started bleeding. The reason for this concept is somewhat esoteric, admittedly, and it has to do with some very cautious, one might even say overly cautious, concerns that we have. And without getting into too much detail, the halacha relates to the fact that if a woman had been in her tahora state and allowed to be intimate with her husband, there is a fear that at some point in the aftermath, perhaps up to 3 days, there may be some remnant of the husband's shechva zera, which may come out of the woman, and the halachos are that any day in which a woman sees, or whether she realizes it or not, but in any day in which there is something like that, a discharge of the man's shechva zera, that day would not count towards the sheva nekiyim, the clean days which are required before one goes to mikvah. Given the fact that we're fearful that a woman might not realize that, that is where we come up with this idea of waiting at least 3 days, which would mean that you have to wait till the fourth day. And then there's an additional esoteric concern for the fifth day as well, in case a husband and wife were intimate in the twilight hours of an evening, and perhaps the husband and wife thought that that still counted as daytime and were starting to count from that next day, and perhaps really it was halachically nighttime. The upshot of all of this is that what's known as, so to speak, mina kavua or halacha psuka, is that by and large we have a 5 day minimum period in which we begin, again this includes the day she actually started seeing blood, that when she goes from having been Tahora and now she sees blood and she becomes Tamea, she is a, what we call colloquially a Nida. So then we count, starting that first day, a minimum of 5 days. Now, a interesting kulo or leniency is that this is the case even if she started seeing blood or spotted right before sunset. So, for example, even if she saw a spot or started bleeding late on a Shabbos afternoon, and she was no longer bleeding by Wednesday afternoon, then before evening on Wednesday, she would be able to do her Hefsekara and theoretically then begin on Thursday or Shevanikiyim. In other words, that means that we counted Shabbos as day one, and therefore Wednesday was the 5th day, and therefore theoretically she could do her Hefsekara then. Again, that's the case even if she started bleeding only right at the end of Shabbos. Interesting halacha that can come up, particularly in the summer, when we make Shabbos, what's known as early Shabbos, is the halacha is that even if the woman has Daven Mariv, or even if the community has already Daven Mariv, if it's in fact still daylight, then that day can count towards this 5th day period. Despite the background that I just gave you, that this concept of the 5-day period, this 5-day minimum timetable is related to intimacy between husband and wife, nevertheless, the Ramah and the famous Posek, the Shach, confirm here in this halacha that it applies across the board, what's known in halacha as a lo plug, even in cases where she had not been with and was not intimate with her husband then. However, the very same Shach, 2 halachos later, does mention an important leniency, and that is that when something takes place in the middle of the Shevanikiyim, something which we'll get to, but something that you're all familiar with, that a woman is in the middle of counting her Shevanikiyim, and let's say, for example, she has a problematic spot, and she brings it to the rabbi, and the rabbi confirms that this is a problem, and then she has to begin her Shevanikiyim all over again. But in such cases, says the Shach, since she had been halachically prohibited to her husband already, then she does not have to start with their waiting with another 5 days, rather she is able to start counting her Shevanikiyim immediately thereafter. Her Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva as well, where he mentions that if there are other situations in which a husband and wife were halachically prohibited from each other, then also in such cases we may waive the requirement for 5 days, or at least be able to count those days in which they were halachically prohibited from each other, that can count towards the 5 days. So, for example, if she started seeing blood a day after when it was usher to be with her husband, such as Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av, or another example may be if one of them, God forbid, was an avel, when husband and wife are prohibited to each other. So in all of those situations, then perhaps that day, even if it's before she actually began to see Dam, may be able to count towards that minimum time. Another important point just to mention, without getting too specific, is that given the interesting, and as I said, some esoteric reasoning behind the mandating 5-day minimum timetable, there are times where if there are particular fertility considerations where upon consultation with the Rav, we may be able to relax those by a day. Furthermore, another example which the poskim sometimes discuss is if waiting that full 5 days will then push back her time from going to the mikvah to what would be a Friday night following a yontif. In other words, if yontif was like on a Thursday, Friday, and then she'd be supposed to be going to the mikvah on Friday night, so since that would be, so to speak, disconnecting her preparations for the mikvah and actually going to the mikvah by a good 2 days, we may want to be lenient if possible and again let her start counting the Shevanikiyim after only 4 days so that she can go to the mikvah closer to proximity to when she prepared for that situation. Another mitigating factor may be in certain cases if a husband is going out of town and by waiting the 5 days she will not be able to go to the mikvah until he's already gone. Perhaps in that case as well, we may be able to allow a woman to start counting after only 4 days, which again obviously would allow her to go to the mikvah 1 day earlier. In all of these situations, these are only, we're not getting into the specifics and not giving any definitive rulings, these are all situations in which in theory, if they were relevant, should be brought to the attention of a Rav. The final point to mention after all is said and done is that this is an important halacha for you to understand, and it's an important background in case it's relevant. However, For most women, in most cases, everything I just mentioned is entirely academic in that most women have a cycle that lasts at least 5 days, so then it becomes a moot point because by the time that she has stopped bleeding, it's already been those 5 days. However, as I said, if there are situations in which a woman has a shorter cycle or she was not expecting her period at all, it's mid-cycle, and she has the type of spotting which, after consultation with the Rav, is something that we have to be machmir on. So those are situations in which we would have to wait 5 days before beginning the Shavuot Nikiyim, even though she may not be bleeding for the full 5 days. And it's in those cases where this background hopefully will help you understand that phenomenon, as well as mention, as I said, those three or four mitigating factors which can be room for allowing a Rav to be makel and letting a woman count only after 4 days. But as I said, all of those could only be done on a case-by-case basis in a consultation with the Rav. Okay, now moving on to the next very, very crucial step in the Tahara process, or leaving the state of Nida, which is our topic this evening, and that is after the five-day minimum, or whether the cycle is even longer, whatever the case may be, when a woman has finally reached the point where she thinks she has stopped seeing dam, she stopped bleeding, and now she wants to begin the next step, which will be the transition step, which will be waiting those 7 clean days, Shavuot Nikiyim, before she can go to the mikvah. In order to transition from the state of when you assume or presume one is seeing blood to the situation in which one can assume or presume that one is already in a situation of tahara, or at least not seeing blood anymore, so we have to do a particular internal examination, particular bedika, which can transform a woman from being becheskas roe dam with presumption of bleeding to a situation where there's a presumption of becheskas ene roe dam. We assume she's no longer bleeding, and this all critical bedika is what is known as the hefsek tahara, where we, so to speak, put a break on or have a transition, we pivot from the first stage where she was bleeding to the second stage where we presume she's no longer bleeding, and we do that through the mechanism known as the Hefsek Tahara. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha in the beginning of Siman Kuf Tzadi Vav, chapter 196, and explains, again, the background. We mentioned this in the first year, that our practice is that we view all women who see blood as in the category of what's known in the Torah as a Zava Gadola, and therefore, whenever she stops seeing blood, she then has to wait 7 days, have 7 clean days, before being able to go to the mikvah. And before she can count those 7 days, we need to know for certain that she stopped seeing blood, and that is accomplished by what's known as the Hefsek Tahara. Before one actually does this internal examination, the Hefsek Tahara, the Ramah and others here quote that it is ideal, it's preferred, that before doing this Hefsek Tahara, a woman should take a bath or somehow sufficiently clean the bottom part of her body so that we can make sure there's no residual or old or dried blood, so that we're worried that she shouldn't see anything on this bedika cloth that she used to check, which may only just be residual blood. So it's best as possible to either bathe or wash oneself and clean oneself as much as possible. If it's impossible or it's not realistic, to do an internal cleaning, then at least an external cleaning of the vaginal area with a wet cloth or, if necessary, even a baby wipe, something ideally should be done. If even this is not possible, then a woman is still allowed to do the Hefsek Tahara, and if, in theory, it comes out clean, then it is considered a reliable Hefsek Tahara. But again, it is preferred, if at all possible, to do some kind of cleaning as thorough as possible before doing the Hefsek Tahara. The Shulchan Aruch discusses the timing of the Hefsek Tahara, and this is very crucial. Just like as we will see for future bedikos, as we have said, since this Hefsek Tahara has to come before the 7-day clean period of Shavuot Nikiyim starts, therefore, since we consider it already the next day after sunset, in the period that's known after Shkia or Bein Hashmashos, so then this Hefsek Tahara has to be done, whether it's on the 5th day or
whatever day that is after she has started bleeding, but it has to be done before the Shkia, before sunset, just to give you a sense without getting into all the complex halachos. Our minhag is to post candle lighting time 18 minutes before Shkia. So while that would not be precise for every given day in a week, if you look at the most recent Friday night, the most recent candle lighting time, the time you have there is 18 minutes before what time sunset was on Friday. So depending on what day of the week you are doing your Hasek Tara, so obviously it'll be a few minutes, perhaps, depending on how soon or close to Friday, but it could be up to a few minutes earlier or later than that. But that's a good, so to speak, starting point to give you a sense of when sunset is. Of course, you can also look in the newspaper. The posted sunset times is exactly what we refer to as Shkia. The Erev book, etc., also lists that. This question, which comes up very frequently, is unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, especially in the winter, on a short day, there are women who find that they have, despite the best of efforts and the best of intentions, missed Shkia, and they have done their Hafsek Tara at some point later than that. There is a big discussion among the poskim if there is room to be lenient. There are some poskim, and this happens to be my tradition, who are admittedly very machmir, and really even a minute late is too much. However, there are other poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, who did allow leniencies up to a certain, not too long, but a few minutes after the Shkia, if one has any of these types of situations, which is certainly call a Rav to consult to see if it's reliable enough and can be lenient. It's certainly worth mentioning, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, does tell us this, and it's common sense, I'm not sure if anyone would argue with it, that even if one did a late hefsek, one that could not count, if in the hopefully unlikely event, but the possible event that the next day a woman also forgot to do a hefsek, that we could count that previous night's hefsek for that day. So, for example, if someone wanted to do a hefsek Tara on Sunday late afternoon slash early evening, so that Monday would have been the first day of her Shevanikiyam. But as it happened, something occurred and she forgot and she was unable and she didn't do it until it was unfortunately too late on Sunday night. And let's say she called the rabbi or she knows the halacha and she realizes it's too late, and therefore she knows that she's going to have to wait and hopefully do a Hefsek Tara on Monday night. But let's say the whole Monday she also forgot to do Hefsek Tara. Then she might be worried, uh-oh, now I've lost 2 days. But the truth is, if you think about it, even though it's not ideal, but the evidence, we can rely on Sunday nights, which was too late for Sunday, but Sunday nights, quote-unquote, hefsek, which, again, was too late to count as a hefsek, but it can, in the end, it could work out. Again, this is not ideal, of course, but the evidence could work out that it could be a, quote, early hefsek for, quote-unquote, Monday, and therefore Tuesday might end up being the first day. I hope that was clear, because it's an important halacha to remember that even though it's not ideal, and it's always better to do the hefsek in the best time possible, which is close to Shkia, but nevertheless, if it was missed and it was too late, one can rely on it if needed for the next day. I mentioned previously the halacha we spoke about when it came to the 5 days, that if a woman is in a community where they've made an early Shabbos or something like that, or even during the week if someone is Davin Marav already, and this actually is quoted primarily in this context here of the Hefsek Tara, and the Ramah here in the beginning of this Siman and Shulchan Aruch quotes a machlokes, two opinions about this question of whether if the community or the woman is already Davin Marav or made Shabbos before nighttime, does that already create a problem for doing a hefsek after that? And the consensus is that while it's ideal to have done the hefsek before Marav, nevertheless, if one hasn't, as long as it's still daylight, without a doubt, the hefsek would still be considered very good and acceptable. In terms of practical suggestions to make sure that women don't unfortunately get themselves into situations which they don't want to be in, especially in the winter when it's an early day and it can sunset can creep up on you, especially for those women who will either be working in a job outside the home or very busy with children inside the home, especially that time of day, where situations could arise where it's very possible to forget or to be distracted. So a good suggestion, which posts do recommend, is to do a bedika in that morning, just in case one forgets to do the Hefsek Tara in the ideal time. Again, the Ramah quotes this, it's not, if necessary, it can be relied on, not ideal. Again, the ideal, to reiterate, is to do the Hefsek Tara close to sunset. But nevertheless, if one has done a bedika earlier that morning, and that was clean, and nothing was spotted, nothing was seen after that, then b'di'evid we would be able to rely on that morning bedika, much the same as I had mentioned from Moshe Feinstein, who was even willing to rely on, in cases of necessity, a bedika, quote-unquote, or a hefsek, I should say, that was done the night before, just too late for the previous day, but certainly early enough for the coming day. So if that was the case, then certainly in the early morning, that would be sufficient. Again, it's not preferred, but it's a good suggestion to do, just as a backup, so that even if you forget the hefsek later in the day, you can rely on that earlier morning bedika as the hefsek. The Shulchan Aruch here tells us that later on in this same siman that for the Hefsek Tara, and of course this is true for all the other bedikas which we'll talk about during Sheva Nekiyim, the way we check ourselves is with a soft white cloth. It can be linen or cotton or any such material. We're of course familiar with the pre-cut bedika cloths. They're convenient, they're the right size, and hopefully the right sensitivity. If necessary, in theory, even a sheet, a white sheet, can be cut up and also used as the hefsek, as the bedika, excuse me, cloth. Important to be sensitive to the issue of size, however, and that's in both directions. Number one, it should be big enough so that it can be wrapped around the tip of the index finger, so you can do a complete bedika. On the other hand, better not to make it too big, because then we are nervous and we have to be careful that the extra part of the bedika, which is not going to be inserted internally, does not pick up any external or confusing stains from the outer part of the vagina, which really should not be a problem, but if one saw them on the bedika cloth, one might be confused and think that they would be a problem. The Shulchan Aruch here describes as well the procedure for how to do a Hefsek Tara, which again is applicable more or less for all of the bedikos of the Sheva Nekiyim, and that is taking again that index finger with the bedika cloth wrapped around it, inserting it vaginally as far as really as it can go, and then moving it top to bottom in a circular motion, pressing it against the internal walls of the vagina, therefore hopefully when it's removed, expecting it, and hopefully that's a comprehensive bedika. If there's anything that's spotted on it, we mentioned the issue of colors last week, then that bedika cloth should be brought to a rav to examine, but hopefully it really would be nothing, and then we would have the hefsek tara. Brides, for a variety of obvious reasons and their unique circumstances, may have some difficulty doing a hefsek tara in a way that is as thorough as she would be able to do when she's already married, and therefore that should be discussed with the kol teachers so that they know how to do it given their unique circumstances. One final point to mention about the Hefsek Tara, which is absolutely crucial to remember, and that is that in theory, even if one has seen a very obviously problematic or even a potentially problematic spot on a bediga cloth for the Hefsek Tara, nevertheless, in theory, one can do a Hefsek Tara pretty much right after that, maybe wait a few minutes, but really can do one right after that. As long as it's not yet shki, as long as it's not yet sunset, you know, it takes two, three, four times, there's really no upper limit, as long as one gets one clean bedika to count as the hefsek before sunset, then that is sufficient. And therefore, as much as I've been saying it's ideal to wait until close to shkia to do the hefsek tara, nevertheless, if at all possible, one should not wait too close to shkia, but leave oneself some time, whether it's 20 minutes, 25 minutes, maybe even 30 minutes, something like that, so that in case, first of all, it's a good buffer if you plan on doing it before that, the 30 minutes or so before, or something to that effect, that's a good buffer, because that way, in case you get distracted or delayed or something comes up, you still have that 30-minute window to play with. But second of all, it's also good because let's say you do it 30 minutes before shkia and you see something. So maybe it's an obvious problem, or maybe it's not an obvious problem, but you're not sure, and you'll bring it to the rabbi just in case. Maybe, but in the meantime, instead of just relying on that, better to maximize your chances of getting a good hefsek by doing more than one. So wait a minute or two, a few minutes even, and then do another hefsek. if necessary, even a third. Hopefully it wouldn't be necessary, but it could be that you'll be able to get a clean essay, because it could very well be that the first spot or two that you saw may not be because you're still bleeding, but because you have some leftover residual blood. And as we mentioned, it's always best to clean oneself as much as possible before doing the hefsek, but it could be that without realizing it, the cleaning was not as comprehensive as it could have been, and therefore perhaps one missed some of that blood and just gets it with the hefsek tara. So even though it looks like it's a problem, but after having done that, maybe if you do it a second time, you won't find anything and you can end up having a good hefsek. So it's good to know that A, you're allowed to do that, and B, to keep that in mind, and therefore not to wait too close to shkia, again, not too early, ideally, but not too late either. Okay, moving on to our third point, there is a minhag that many of you are probably familiar with. It's a very big chumrah, but it is a minhag that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch to do what's called the moch dachuk. And the moch dachuk basically means that after a good clean hefsek, take the very same type of bdika cloth, and a woman is to insert it again as deeply as she can, and then leave that in for a prescribed period of time, and then to take that out and to check that as well. Again, all of this happening on that night of the Hefsek Tara, and hopefully if that is good as well as the Hefsek Tara being good, then the next morning one can begin and start counting the Sheva Nikiyim. In terms of how long the Moch Dachuk should stay in, there is a variety of opinions on this, going from as little as under 20 minutes, all the way in some opinions to 72 minutes, 50 minutes. There's a whole very wide range of opinions on this. This certainly should be discussed, in particular with the Rav. I would add as well, since this is a, without getting into too many details, but this is a, as I say, a minhag l'chumra, many rabbanim, if there are situations of discomfort or staining problems, many rabbanim will be mekel or even davka advocate a woman in a given situation not using or not performing this moch dachuk, and this is something which should certainly be discussed in consultation with a rav. Okay, now let's move on to our next, really our second to last issue, and this is the big topic. This is the concept of bedikos. In terms of, again, how to perform a bedika and the type of a bedika cloth, so that is similar both in terms of how we check and what we check with, is similar during the whole week. Bedikos is similar to what I already told you about the hefsek tahara. In terms of the quantity or the amount of bedikos that one should do, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that ideally one is supposed to do two bedikos in the morning and in the late afternoon, all 7 days of the Sheva Nikiyim. So ideally one will have done the hefsek tahara, then the moch dachuk, and then in sum, 14 further bedikos before going to the mikveh. That is ideal. Furthermore, as I mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch says it is ideal that each of these bedikos should be as thorough, and the bedika itself should be done as internally, as thoroughly as the hefsek tahara. However, there is more room to be lenient when it comes to the bedikos if there are issues of irritation, and if doing a bedika a little less thoroughly or not as penetrating as deeply would make a difference, then again, that's something to talk about with the Rav, but it may be that that would be recommended as opposed to in the hefsek tahara, where we are more machmir on doing a thorough bedika. As I mentioned, ideally one would be doing two bedikos every day, a morning and a late afternoon one. When it comes to the morning bedika, ideally, both from a halachic perspective and practically, it is the best to do that bedika right when a woman wakes up. I say halachically it's good to do it right in the morning, that's the way it's quoted in the poskim, but I would say even more than that, from a practical perspective, it's very good for a woman to get into a routine, and the easiest thing, time, you know, once we're up and getting her dressed and getting kids ready, etc., going to work, so then it's already more difficult, but the routine of waking up and going to the bathroom and washing up, which we all do every morning anyway, so if we can build this into our routine, practically speaking, it's the best guarantee for not forgetting. We'll discuss issues of forgetting in a few moments in more detail, but as all of you know, there are different situations in which people make have situations in which they forget, and sometimes it can be very difficult. And I have more than once recommended to people who've called me to avoid problems that they have found themselves in, that it's best to get into that routine and do that bedikah right in the morning. That way, whatever else happens the rest of the day, you know you have that bedikah right away. And if you do it in that routine, it's unlikely, hopefully, that you forget it. If you get into that routine, you have the bedikah cloth there in the bathroom with all the other things that you do to get ready in the morning. It's really a very recommended routine to be in. However, even though that's ideal, halakhically, practically, etc., nevertheless, technically, one can fulfill this idea of a morning bedikah really any time in the morning. And I certainly recommend in general, whether it's right in the morning as I've suggested, or really any time in the morning, it's a very good thing to do, not to just wait till the evening to rely on that bedikah, but again, ideally to do that first bedikah in the morning as well. The more routine that you make that, the more regularly you do that, the more heartache you will be able to save yourself later in the day if something comes up. Apropos to that, to mention the next issue, which is the concept of the afternoon bedikah. The timing of this is just like the Hefsekara. Again, it cannot be after Shkia, after sunset. It's too late already. It's already the next day. But it should be close to sunset. Bedieved, if one has to do it a little earlier than that, again, any time in the late afternoon is sufficient, perhaps even in the early afternoon in cases, bedieved, but ideally close to the sunset. Now, I want to mention a number of things here which have to do with difficult situations or cases in which a woman forgot. So the halacha is that if a woman forgot one bedikah, or even an entire day of bedikos, meaning two bedikos, that in most cases, we'll get to the cases this is not true in a few moments, but for now, it suffices to say that in most cases, that will be okay b'diavad. In other words, it will not delay or interrupt her shevanakiyam or anything like that. That is true in most cases. Given that fact, it is important to consider, and again, no one prescription that I can give in a shir like this will be tailor-made for every situation, but it is certainly the case often, and certainly if you think you are a candidate for this, you should be in consultation with the Rav, is sometimes the case where, as a general prescription, or at least in certain circumstances, a Rav may advise a woman bedavka to not do a bedika in the late afternoon. Sometimes this can happen because a woman, time-wise, especially in the winter, may be in the car, coming home from work, in carpool, things like this. And I have to tell you, it may sound outlandish or shocking to you, but I can tell you that there are women who have pulled over on the side of the road to do a bedika, or much more problematic even than that, I know of cases of women who have done bedikos while they were driving. Now, that sounds crazy, but it has happened. The reason that it's particularly crazy and not recommended is not only for the obvious driving problems that that creates, but also it is very hard to do a good bedikah that way. Not only is it not easy to do a good bedikah that way, I think it's very likely, and I have experience, where women who have actually injured themselves while doing it. I'm not necessarily referring to anything terribly injurious, but sometimes they have seen spots on the bedikah when they've done it, and I am absolutely convinced that those, unfortunately, were not a residual or actual dam nida spots, but actual injuries that they basically cause themselves, or irritations that they cause by doing the bedikah in such a extreme situation. It is far, far better in most cases, if we're in that situation, to just not do the bedikah. Again, bedieved, if one misses an afternoon bedikah, especially if you had done one earlier that day, it is not a problem whatsoever. Much better not to be rushed and take a chance of hurting yourself, God forbid, in a car, or even doing an irritation or creating an unnecessary spot. Much better to just wait and hold off than to create a problem like that, which could be more, as I say, more problematic than any situation you would have had. That's one issue to consider. Another issue which I alluded to before, which is somewhat common, and again has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis between a woman and her rav, and that is a question of whether a woman has certain irritations, whether it's a general sensitivity or irritation to bedikos, or because of a particular situation, close proximity to still to birth or something like that, giving birth, a lot of different reasons why a woman may have a particular irritation. And sometimes the petechos themselves, not only could they be painful, but sometimes, as I alluded to in that more outlandish car example I gave, but even in more serene, normal petecha cases, just the very act of the petecha or the petecha cloth can create irritation and sometimes even create spotting. And therefore, if a woman knows that this is relevant to her, then again, in consultation with the Rav, should discuss this, because it's very possible and very likely that the Rav may tell her that she should only do one petika a day. If that's still a problem, then the Rav may even tell her to specifically wait and not do it. To actually forego doing petikos on certain times during those Shevanikiyim. I'll get to it in a moment, but there are only some very specific and minimal amounts of petikos which are absolutely required. And therefore, if there are any unique situations, either it's bidyavid because a woman forgot, or even if she knows that she's going to have problems and therefore in anticipation with the guidance of a Rav, we may specifically tell her not to do certain or even a majority of the petikos, because as I said, sometimes that can create more problems than we otherwise want to solve. So whether it's a case of women either forgetting accidentally or having pain or having too much going on from professional or family responsibilities, the afternoon petikos particularly are difficult. But the morning, though, depending on a woman's sensitivity and body, could also be difficult. And therefore, if any of those situations are relevant, whether after the fact or even before, she should be in consultation with a Rav to see if there are ways that we can be flexible and be helpful. All of that, however, is for the most part, with the exception of two bedikos. It's a huge machlokes, but for the most part, we paskin as a Shulchan Aruch rules that the minimum bedikos, however, the bare minimum, are on days number 1 and 7. Again, number 1 should not be confused with Hefsek Tara. Hefsek Tara is before we count day 1, so Hefsek Tara was on a late Sunday afternoon, so that means Monday is day 1. And again, day 7, that last day before the evening that you would go to the mikvah. Bedikos on day 1 and day 7, we assume, are absolutely required. Now, again, it does not have to be two bedikos that day. It's ideal, of course, but minimally it has to be one bedika that day. But one bedika minimally on day 1 to start the count, one bedika minimally on day 7 to conclude the count before going to the mikvah. That is how the Shulchan Aruch rules, and the overwhelming majority of the cases, a Rav will not allow a woman to go to mikvah if either of those are missing. I have had more than one case of great, great heartache. I cannot, maybe I don't have to, but I cannot articulate how painful these situations have been for the couples involved, for a variety of different reasons, where a 7th day bedika was forgotten, nothing was done in the morning, the woman was counting on doing the bedika when she came home, or even for that matter, if it was at work, but close to Shkia, something came up, she forgot, she was at work, there was food on the stove, the kids were crying, any number of reasons why the most conscientious and most well-thinking and meaning of women can simply forget or not be able to do bedika, and then you're left with this very difficult situation of having missed that 7th day bedika. Now, again, those situations are not as bad as sometimes people forget, because it's not necessarily the case that a woman would have to start all 7 from scratch. If a woman had done a bedika on day 2, then in retrospect we can count that as day 1, which would mean that the day that we're talking about now where she forgot is really only day 6, and then we could have her do bedikos the next day, and really in the end it only took 8 days, she only missed going to the mikvah by 1 day. That itself can be psychologically, emotionally, and otherwise difficult in its own right, although not as bad as she might have, or one might have thought. This is why, again, this is a classic example of an ounce of prevention being worth more than a pound of cure. It's always best to avoid these situations, not only by being as conscientious as possible in the afternoon, but again, I go back to harping on what I've mentioned already a few times, which is why it's always recommended, especially on day 1 and day 7, to get in a routine and do that bedika in the morning. It's always good if, in case you remember, you can do the 2nd bedika close to Shkia, but this way, no matter what, you have that already, so to speak, in the books, and worst comes to worst, you can rely on that. It prevents a lot of heartache and a lot of potential pain. If, however, for whatever reason, that wasn't the case, and one simply really did forget whether it was a day one or a day seven, then again, without, even though it's likely that it will cause a problem, I still would say don't necessarily rush to any conclusions. Please be in touch with the Rav, and there may be a problem, that's true. I can't promise you that there won't ever be a problem, and there won't ever be a delay in going to the mikvah, but doing it in consultation with the Rav, A, keeps open the possibility that maybe there is a way out, maybe there won't be a delay, or even if there is a delay, but hopefully it won't be any longer than it has to be. Again, better to avoid the situations. Obviously, best way to do it is have a routine, do particulars in the morning, but worst comes to worst, if there is a situation where one forgot or wasn't able to do a bdika, please be in touch with the Rav and without jumping prematurely to any conclusions. The last halachos that I want to mention for this transition stage of going from being a nida to then leaving the state of nidus and being ready for going to the mikvah is the minhag and the halacha that is quoted here in Shulchan Aruch, quoted already from the time of the Gemara, about wearing white. The way the minhag has come down to us, the minhag that Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Ramah, is that we have a minhag of wearing white undergarments as well as sleeping on white sheets. This is done again so that hopefully if there will be a spot, we will be able to see it clearly, and then it could be brought to a Rav to examine, as opposed to if it would be a colored sheet, we're worried that it won't be seen as well or be as clear. So therefore there is this minhag of wearing white. In fact, it's such a central minhag that in certain sources, this whole period is not so much known as Shevin Akiyam, the clean days, but sometimes it's known as the days of white. You maybe don't know. However, as important and central as this concept is, if for whatever reason a woman is in a situation where she does not have white, she still should continue to do bedikos and continue to count. That does not necessarily cancel out the Shevin Akiyam days. She should just make sure to pre-check her undergarments or her sheets before wearing them or sleeping on them, and that way hopefully see nothing, and that way if we saw something the next day or after that, we would know what it was from, as opposed to getting yourself in trouble by not checking, and then maybe it's an old stain that you didn't realize was there. A last point to mention is that nowadays, where we have the minhag of wearing tight-fitting undergarments, there are poskim who mentioned that no longer do we need to have the custom of wearing the white bed sheets, assuming that one is wearing the white undergarments to sleep. Nevertheless, Moshe Feinstein still recommends it, but it is worth noting, and it could be that there's different customs, because there definitely are some poskim who understandably suggest that the need for sheets was when people didn't necessarily wear those type of undergarments to sleep. But nowadays, when we would be wearing white undergarments to sleep, perhaps it's an unnecessary point to still wear the white bed sheets. However, Moshe Feinstein, as I mentioned, in addition to the white undergarments, he still does think that the bed sheets are a good idea. Okay, this wraps up my presentation or review of halachos of this second stage of leaving the state of being anida. And as I mentioned, if there is an interest, Emir Tashem, we can provide a future shurim. We would discuss some of the outstanding issues, which are number one, the whole issue of behavior between husband and wife, the concept of hachakos, during this period when a woman is anida, whether she's still seeing dam or when she's in her Shevin Akiyam state, and then the issue of the mikvah preparation, the bath, etc., checking oneself to go to the mikvah, and finally, when one is in the mikvah, the concept of chatzitza. These are all issues which are more or less familiar to you. Many of you have asked me shilas about various aspects of all of these, and if there's an interest in review classes for any one or all of these, please be in touch with me, as I mentioned at the outset of the shir, and we will help. We'll try, Mirtz Hashem, with God's help, to provide those reviews for you. In addition, whether it's from topics we've discussed the last two shurim or any of the two we didn't have a chance to get to, of course, I remind you that I am always available as best as I can for you for any discussion or any questions that you have, both practical or theoretical. And I encourage you to please avail yourself. I'm happy to be there for you whenever I can. The shul number is 410-358-8604, and my home office is 410-653-2423, and my email is rabbigottlieb@shomriemuna.us. Between in one of those. I am relatively, I would say, accessible, and if you don't get me right away, I do try to get back to you as soon as possible, especially if it's a time-sensitive shaila, and hopefully together we can continue to fulfill this very important, demanding, no doubt, but nevertheless important, and hopefully spiritually and emotionally fulfilling mitzvah together. I'm happy to help you and do my part, but of course, ultimately the responsibility Hashem has given you, and all of you bear that responsibility with great effort and great dignity, and I continue to have my admiration for all of you as you continue to do your best in this area of halacha, and it is a privilege of mine to be able to help you whenever I can, so please don't hesitate to ask me any questions you have in this regard. Be well, all the best, and have a good night.